This week on Free Association, we're talking about happiness. I chat with Dr. Clint Norseth, and we try to answer questions like, why is it so fleeting, or what are its limits, or how can we use positive psychology research to improve our lives? USU students tell us what they think gets in the way of happiness, and I discuss a couple studies about whether or not happiness leads to career success, or does career success lead to happiness. This is Free Association. So today I have Dr. Clint Norseth. He is a psychologist at CAPS, and we're going to be talking about the mythical unicorn that is happiness. And I'm just kind of curious, what got you into positive psychology?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because a lot of times as psychologists and counselors and therapists, we try and focus on fixing a lot of problems. And that's good to an extent, but I think there's a little bit more to life than just trying to get rid of the bad. And so I kind of looked into positive psychology and found out that there's more to offer than just fixing the bad. So
oftentimes when I'm sitting with a person in session, like, they just say, I just want to be happy. So what do you think people mean when they say that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure that they know what they mean when they say that. But it's hard because people have different definitions of happiness. But a lot of times when people say, I just want to be happy, they're talking about having their life circumstances change for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I want a good job, I want lots of money, I want a boyfriend or a girlfriend, or I want, those kinds of things will make me happy.
Yeah, so more like life events or materials.
Right, right.
What do you think kind of contributes to that on a societal level? Like, how did we get to this point where happiness is associated with, like, the right job, the degree, the, you know, fancy car, whatever it looks like?
Yeah, well, I think social media has a lot to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we only post the happy, exciting, fun things most of the
mm-hmm.
time. And so a lot of times when we look out there in society, we see people that are happy and people that get new cars and new jobs and think that that's what life is actually about.
I've noticed that when people are bringing up stuff that's more vulnerable for them, it tends to be kind of looked down upon, like a cry for help.
Right. Yeah, it's harder to talk about those kind of things and show that to
mm-hmm.
society.
Yeah, and then on top of that, you have that selection bias that you were talking about, where if people are only posting happy things on social media, then you're going to assume, well, if I'm not happy all the time, then there must be something wrong with me.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so what do you think people misunderstand about happiness?
Yeah, well, I think it's hard because of those influences from society that seeing people, seeing like they're, like you said, doing something wrong. But a lot of times, so research has kind of shown that the people that are actually most happy don't necessarily have all of those things. What they find people that are happiest are people that have meaning and value and purpose in life, relationships, those kinds of things that kind of make life different than just things.
So that just makes me think about, like, where do we even learn how to do that?
Right, yeah. Well, then I think there's innate feelings of meaning and purpose and value
mm-hmm.
that can be found regardless of all this, because things change all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get used to having technology and all of these things that help us do stuff
mm-hmm.
that 10, 15 years ago didn't even exist. And so it's kind of a thing that makes us, if we find something deeper in us that's always there, then we don't have to rely on those things to make us happy.
Yeah, I like that point, because I think sometimes with meaning, it can kind of get wrapped up in this, you're searching for it, you have to find what is meaningful, rather than taking stock of what's there and saying, wow, okay, so there's a whole bunch of different things that are meaningful. I'm kind of curious, like, what are those things that you think, you know, students or people tend to look towards in order to find that meaning?
Right, well, some of the research shows that the most important things that help bring meaning into people's lives are are things like relationships, spirituality, mm-hmm. Physical health actually can be a really meaningful and positive thing in somebody's life, and it can be also a difficult thing.
Mm-hmm.
Things like leisure, enjoying activities that just are enjoyable just for what they do, not how they look to other people, but just intrinsically rewarding and valuable.
Yeah, so there's this piece of what's rewarding, but also kind of what are your values behind it.
Yeah, exactly. Values is an important part of finding meaning, and that can be different for everyone.
There might be kind of objective things that provide meaning, like relationships or job or interests, but the subjective piece is going to come from what are the values that kind of enforce that.
Right.
Awesome. So we're going to take a quick break. It's time for Hearing from USU, where USU students answer questions. This week's question is, what gets in the way of happiness for students?
I honestly, truly believe that a lot of these social media apps and technology these days gets in the way of true happiness, because even social media is just a quick dopamine fix, and we as humans crave that, you know? And I feel like that's definitely not true happiness when it comes in the short social media style burst that it is, and people on campus are all about social media, the youth are all about social media, and I think that definitely gets in the way. Along with the fact that people, in my personal perspective, are kind of afraid to reach out on campus and try to experience new things.
I think for students in particular, it's a particularly interesting time in their life. It's the time when you are officially, in our culture, given the title of being an adult. And I think that that puts a lot of pressure on you. And I think one thing that can help alleviate that is breaking the barrier of finding your own community. I know that when I was an undergrad, long, long time ago, my first semester, I didn't really find my community because I was working so much. So I was gone all fall semester working whenever I had any spare time. And then my spring semester, there wasn't any work. And so I had a lot of spare time, got to know my roommates, and then I got my own social group. And so I think that finding your community as you are maturing is very important.
So I want to touch on something that came up during the seminar that I attended with you. And it was this idea of kind of like the innate limits of happiness. I think you called it set points.
Right.
And I kind of wanted to hear more about that from you because I think it's an important concept.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting concept that they found through research, and it's kind of, in some ways, you could consider it a limit to our happiness.
Mm-hmm.
But what they found is they did some studies with twins, and they looked at the happiness level in twins who have mm-hmm. similar genetic makeup versus non-twin siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found is that the twins actually had more similar levels of happiness kind of constantly. And so their conclusion was that this kind of set point or this determination of our genetics actually determines our levels of happiness to a certain extent. And they actually found that it's to about half of our happiness is determined by our genetic makeup.
Huh.
Yeah.
Could be kind of intimidating.
It can be. It's interesting because that people feel like maybe that's not fair, or it's hard to do anything about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not saying that you can't be as happy as somebody else who has a higher set point than you.
Right.
It's just that we fluctuate around that set
mm-hmm.
point. It's similar to like a body type. You don't have much of a choice to kind of your body type.
True.
Genetics make that up. You can be healthier or not,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't kind of determine how we use that body or kind of fluctuate around the capabilities that body gives us.
I don't know. That's just really interesting because I'm thinking of those people that like are really just like striving for happiness and what that means for them if their set point is maybe just a little lower than the average person.
Yeah, right. It can be really frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
It can be difficult for somebody to value happiness so much that they're working so hard to get to that when their set point maybe doesn't allow them to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think overvaluing happiness is a problem for anyone, because the more that you value it, it seems like the less meaningful it is.
Yeah, hence the mythical unicorn.
Exactly, that's right.
Yeah, but there's still some percentage left there, right? If 50% is set point, then what's left?
Right, so the research shows that there's 50% of happiness does relate to our set point. The other 10 is life circumstances.
Okay.
But the other 40 is kind of unaccounted for, which means that...
Interesting.
Yeah, it means that we have maybe some control over that.
Okay.
Maybe we can find some intention, some
mm-hmm.
purpose, some value, and kind of cultivate happiness with that 40%.
Okay, so all is not lost.
Right, that's right.
So when you say that there's 10% that has to do with life circumstance, can you say a little bit about, like, is that... like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like what exactly comprises that 10%?
Right, so that those life circumstances could be money. Money does affect happiness to a certain
mm-hmm.
extent. Once you have your basic needs met for you,
mm-hmm.
You're not poor and on the street and kind of having no food or those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
To a point that can make you happy, but
mm-hmm.
after that, money doesn't relate to happiness. But other life circumstances could include
probably like physical health, stuff like that.
Yeah, physical health is important as well
mm-hmm.
to happiness. Happiness.
Yeah. So, you know, we've kind of dabbled in this a little bit, but what does happiness actually mean? Or if not happiness, like what concepts should be thought about when we're thinking about that 40%?
Yeah, right. So happiness sometimes I think can be misunderstood as
mm-hmm.
a term. I think positive psychology kind of prefers words like fulfilled or
mm-hmm.
meaningful or engaged, those kinds of things to describe life. Because it kind of allows us to have a bigger picture of what we're experiencing, because happiness focuses on positive emotions.
Mm-hmm.
But life is life, and we experience difficult things. We experience depression or anxiety or
mm-hmm.
sadness or things like that.
It's kind of inevitable, isn't it?
Right. And so what positive psychology says, well, you can still have a meaningful and purposeful life
mm-hmm.
despite experiencing those things, in addition to.
Yeah, and I think the thing that sticks out to me is things like meaning and purpose, those seem a lot easier to figure out. Like, they're broader, but it's a little bit more directional. Like, I know what to look at in order to look at meaning, whereas if I'm like, well, am I happy?
Right.
It's harder to answer that question versus, like, do I have meaning? Do I have purpose?
Yeah, and I think that direction is important because it's continued. It's
mm-hmm.
not like a destination. You don't arrive at happiness and then just stop, right? Life's a journey, not a destination, right?
Seriously.
Like a cliche saying.
It's cliche, but it's true, because sometimes if you're like, well, happiness is, you know, this one job that I'm going to get,
mm-hmm.
and once I get it, you know, all of these things are going to happen for me. Well, what if they don't? Or what if the things that happen aren't as meaningful for you?
Right.
Then how upsetting is that going to be?
Yeah, exactly. It kind of ends there. You know?
Pretty much. And hence why people end up having midlife crisis or mid-college crisis or mid-grad school crises.
Exactly.
For Science, where we talk about the latest psychological science on the topic of the week. Happiness in our careers are like a chicken versus egg dilemma. Do people that feel successful in their career feel more happy or do happy people feel more successful in their career? This question matters because as a society, we emphasize things like choice of major and career choice as a key decision in college, and students agonize over these decisions. It can cause all sorts of stress. So we know from correlational studies that happier people are more satisfied with their jobs, but we all know that correlation doesn't mean causation. So another place we can look is the longitudinal data. And Hassam, Pollan, and Heckhausen suggested that people who generally have more positive moods tend to have higher motivation levels. This means that when it comes to job search, they're more likely to invest more time and effort in the career decision-making process. As such, this makes the probability of finding employment that is a good fit higher. But you know, we should also look at things like experimental data, and there are some fascinating things there. In 2008, PJ Carnevale conducted a study where half the participants received a mood boost by getting a gift, and the other half read some newspaper cartoons. And then they were asked to engage in negotiations. Folks that were in the positive mood tended to be more cooperative and better able to find a mutually beneficial solution. And we can see a similar pattern with optimism, such that when people are placed in an optimistic mood compared to a neutral mood, they tend to set higher goals or spend more time at a challenging task. So overall, the data does suggest that perhaps our mood is more indicative of career success than our career success creating changes in our mood. And it's really important that while the data suggests that our mood matters, it is important to remember that positive mood doesn't come from things like pressure to be happy or stay positive, but rather intentionally building a resilient, meaningful, and impactful life. And that's your scoop on psychological science. So during this last part, I want to talk about like how people can apply all of this great knowledge to their life, because I think, you know, it's really easy to default to, you know, Instagram life where you're posting all your happiness, but you're actually not doing so well. So, you know, generally what do happier people or people that have like more meaning, more strength, more resilience, more of that awareness, what do they actually do?
Right, yeah, well, I think it's all focused on shifting your focus from that 10% to that 40% of intentional activity that can kind of make life meaningful and valuable. And that could be a lot of different things, whether it's strengthening relationships, having more meaningful experiences, and mindfulness and being self-aware and conscientious is a real big part of that too.
Yeah, it sounds like too there's this piece where you have to accept that set point. It's almost like in order to start taking action, you need to take stock of where you are and just be able to accept that.
Right, yeah. There's that 60%, right, that we're just kind of given, that we have to accept. And we're, in a way, almost built to notice the negative things as well, too, in life.
Oh, yes.
Because we want to keep ourselves safe and we want to protect ourselves. And so there's an evolutionary aspect to focusing on the negative that we have to kind of work with as well.
So that's where things like mindfulness, being aware of those negative thoughts and their function,
right,
rather than kind of just focusing on, I'm having these negative thoughts, this means something about me and my happiness and what I'm capable of and so on and so forth.
Yeah, right.
Which is tough work to do.
It is tough. But positive psychology kind of gives a lot of things that you can do to kind of make life more intentional. And there's a few core things that they focus on. One that's really important is practicing gratitude.
Okay.
So a lot of research has been done with gratitude, and it shows that the more grateful a person is, the more likely they are to experience happiness and fulfillment and those kinds of things. Because we take things for granted a lot. And we aren't mindful of how they really impact our lives. And so being grateful allows us to live in the moment and to kind of appreciate life and what we've been given.
Yeah, I think the powerful piece about that is, especially when we're struggling, we can get so tunneled visioned that we isolate and we don't really want to look around at what's there, and we miss out on, you know, those opportunities to be grateful for, you know, like the 10% where maybe you are financially stable, or even all of the relationships that you have and the relationships that have helped you get to where you are now and where you want to be in the future.
Yeah. And one really powerful intervention that we do with positive psychology is to encourage somebody to write a gratitude letter.
Oh, wow.
To somebody that's important to them, and let them know how important and why they are to that person's life. And if you want to be really challenging, you have them read it to that person in front of their face. And,
That, I mean, just thinking about that, I'm imagining, like, reading a letter like that to my mom, and, oh, man, we would both just be crying the whole time. But I could totally see how, in some ways, that would even be more of a meaningful experience for both of us rather than me getting her, like, a new kitchen knife for Christmas or something.
Yeah, exactly. Or having the conversation over text or email or something like that.
Oh, but that is really vulnerable.
It's very vulnerable. And that's the power in it.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to focus more on the meaning of that rather than kind of hiding behind all the protections of certain types of communication. And it allows you to connect and to be present with those powerful emotions.
Yeah, that is so true. You know, it's interesting because, you know, I'm really interested in the concept of vulnerability. And it seems like people put themselves in this middle ground where they're just trying to avoid it so much, where they're not engaging in, like, gratitude and connection and present moment to say, hey, here's what this relationship means to me, or they're totally avoiding talking about really intense and vulnerable emotions. So they're just kind of in this middle place where there's no connection.
Right.
There's no vulnerability either way. It's like, you know,
right.
Wheat bread.
Yeah. Exactly. But and you can't always live in connection and vulnerability all of the time. So it's understandable that we take breaks from that. But I think more of the time we're taking more breaks from that than we need to.
Oh yeah. Just kind of assuming that if we do it once or that we're just gonna stay there the whole time.
Right.
On either direction, but we're not really built that way.
No, for sure.
Yeah. So I guess I'm wondering, you know, if people are kind of listening to this and they're like, okay, I get there's some intentionality I can do, but where should they be, like, evaluating? Like, if someone wanted to take stock of where they're at with this, what should they be looking at?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of important things to look at. Gratitude can help you do that. It can help you realize kind of what you already have, what relationships are there, what kind of things are actually meaningful to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think looking within yourself is something really important too.
Mm-hmm.
And positive psychology focuses on one aspect of us, and that is our character strengths.
Mm-hmm.
These kind of solid, pretty stable types of strengths that we have, like curiosity or love or kindness or open-mindedness, that a lot of times don't get as much attention that they should.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty interesting because they develop interventions along with that too, where if you want to be more fulfilled, you'll kind of learn what those character strengths are and use them in different ways. So let's say one of your character strengths is curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
To maybe improve some happiness or fulfillment, you'll maybe take a new route to work or to school, or maybe try a new type of food or try a new kind of music.
Yeah.
And kind of experience it differently than you have before.
I think that's such a unique perspective, because so often when we think of growth, we think about something that we're like zero on,
exactly.
And then how do we get to 100, rather than, okay, I'm like 80% here. How can I get like another 5%?
Right.
And it does sound like that would be a lot easier and a lot less like catastrophic, because it's really scary to try something from scratch, but yet that's the assumption that we make when we're growing.
Right. And that, yeah, these strengths allow us to focus on what we are and build on that rather than focusing on what we're not and how challenging it would be to become what we're not.
Yeah. It's really easy to do, to just get focused on becoming what you're not.
Exactly.
Or what you see on Instagram or Facebook.
or what other people are, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So is there anything else that you would add that people should think about, consider, or do in order to kind of cultivate positive psychology in their life?
Yeah, well, I think one last thing to kind of bring home the point of just living in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's things every day that we can savor and
mm-hmm.
just really be present for. And, you know, whether it's a delicious meal, some
mm-hmm.
delicious ice cream, a beautiful view,
mm-hmm.
A great time, a great conversation, being with friends. A lot of times when we can focus on those experiences as meaningful and
mm-hmm.
not be kind of stuck thinking about the next paper that we have due or the next person that we want to try and meet or
mm-hmm.
Whatever we are trying to achieve, if we kind of just can be mindful and be present and savor those moments that we have, I think that adds a lot to life.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how simultaneously easy and difficult that is, because I think about how many opportunities we have in a day to do that, like walking down the hall and maybe listening to the music that's piping through in the TSC, or enjoying the feeling of cold on your face,
right?
Which, depending on where you're from, might not actually
or
be
sun.
Enjoyable.
Yeah. Or sun.
Yep. Yeah. There's that California there.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, you know, I think it's just something people forget about because it's so easy to get wrapped up in thoughts.
It is. Yeah, it's an easy thing not to be mindful, not to be
mm-hmm.
Kind of present.
Yeah.
We have a lot of distractions that make it hard for us.
Absolutely. Yeah, I almost think about, like, I notice that whenever I leave the building, that's always a good shift. Because if you can think of somewhere that you can, like, set a specific thing every day that you're going to interact with to be mindful,
right,
then it becomes a lot easier.
Right. Routines and
mm-hmm.
kind of finding opportunities where you can make a shift is definitely a useful strategy.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today. I think that this information is just, everyone should know about it, so.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Free Association is a collaborative podcast between Aggie Radio, alternative radio for an alternative audience, and Utah State University's Counseling and Psychological Services, or CAPS. A special thanks to Dr. Clint Norseth and the students willing to share their thoughts. And a special thanks to you, the listener. If you want to help Free Association, share it with a friend. Please note that all content within the podcast is solely the opinion of the person speaking it and does not reflect any specific policy or viewpoint held by Utah State University. Thanks again for listening to Free Association. I'm Katie Labor.